Yankees take a commanding 2-0 lead in the ALCS. Is this series already over? Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Wednesday, October 16th. Your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. Follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Christian Rau. Follow him on Twitter at Christian S. Rau, R-A-U-H. He's got his spooky season black background behind him. I love it. Okay, so last night, Christian, like, we're going to talk about the Gold Glove nominations. We're going to talk about Philly extending Rob Thompson. But we're going to talk about tonight's matchup between the Mets and the Dodgers. But first, we got to talk about last night's game between the Yankees and the Guardians. Yankees win 6-3 in the Bronx to take a commanding 2-0 lead in the ALCS. And I feel like I'm probably not the only one to say this. This was a sloppy game on both sides, but the Yankees come out on the winning side of it. Am I wrong for thinking that this aesthetically was not a very appealing baseball game?
Oh no, this was an absolute slugfest. There's no doubt about it. It might not look that way on the scorecard when it's all said and done, but this was two managers trying to figure it out. And you know, you had a brand new manager in Stephen Vogt trying to even the series, using everything in his back pocket to do so, not being afraid to dive into some options early, which we will definitely get into, because I think that could be a deciding factor of, you know, moving forward for the rest of the series. And then you have another one who, honestly, I think has made some really good decisions this entire postseason, but some of those decisions just haven't really fell his way in that game yesterday. So yeah, I think this was a slugfest. I think this was, I agree with you, wasn't very pleasing. But when you have 45 different pitchers, right? I mean, that's how many we used. No, there was definitely a lot of pitchers used, and there was just a lot of different, just different weird moments happened in this game. But that's what I love about it, because it wasn't a cut and clear baseball game. It was playoff baseball, baby. It's exactly what it was.
These two teams combined to use two starters and 11 relievers. I want to talk about what Cleveland did in this game, but let's start with the Yankees, because obviously they won. They deserve to go first. You see good and bad, right? Gerrit Cole gives you 4 1/3 innings, 6 hits, 2 runs. He walks 4, not the same Gerrit Cole that we're used to seeing, but at the same time, giving up 6 hits to the Guardians. Every single one of them that he gave up was a base hit. And ultimately, he didn't allow any runners to score, or he didn't allow any hits with runners in scoring position. So Gerrit Cole does enough in this game. Aaron Judge is getting a lot of the attention for what happened. He goes 1-for-3 in this game. He has a sac fly RBI in the second. He also finally gets a home run in the 7th inning, first one of the postseason off of Hunter Gaddis. But to me, it's really the turning point was that 2nd inning. Tanner Bibee, the best starter for the Guardians, is on the mound. He's down 1-0. The first 3 New York hitters in the first, it's a Gleyber Torres double, who Torres continues to just be hot in the postseason. Juan Soto singles, and then Aaron Judge scores Gleyber on a fielding error at shortstop, not a usual thing you see from Brian Rocchio of the Guardians, not a thing you see from that good defensive team. But in the 2nd inning, they open it up. Anthony Volpe single, Anthony Rizzo single, Verdugo doubles, scores a run, moves Rizzo to 3rd. And then after Gleyber pops out, Bibee is told to intentionally walk Juan Soto to get to Aaron Judge. Did you ever think at any point in the 2024 season you would see any team intentionally walk somebody to get Aaron Judge to the plate?
Oh, absolutely not. And I mean, I think you could say that, have you ever thought that since 2018? Maybe in 2017 when he was, you know, striking out 200 times that you'd want to walk somebody to get to Aaron Judge. Okay, maybe I could see that conversation, even though he still hit 50 home runs that season. But other than that, no, there's no way. Even though he hasn't had the best postseason, you're asking to awaken a sleeping giant. And that might have been the case that happened in this one because he's finally hit the home run, even though it wasn't one of those, you know, Judge moments, even though they like to call it on the show that that was a Judge moment, his October moment.
No, it wasn't.
No, there's better things Aaron Judge has done in the postseason in his career. And I think we will still see his quote unquote October moment at some point later on in these playoffs because I don't think they're done in the ALCS, unfortunately, here. But this goes back to, this is different. You know, this is different than walking Francisco Lindor of the Mets the other day to get the Mark Vientos. You know,
make the joke. Shout out to Jeremy in our Discord, our resident favorite Mets fan. Some people are saying Mark Vientos is better than Aaron Judge because when Vientos gets somebody intentionally walked to bring him up, he hits a grand slam. When Aaron Judge gets somebody intentionally walked to bring him up, all he gets is a sack fly. So some people are saying in that respect, Mark Vientos is better than Aaron Judge.
I mean, it makes perfect sense if you don't think about it.
But no, this is just this whole, like, it's, I mean, that was a wild sequence. Obviously, I'm going to argue it sort of works out for the Guardians. One out, bases loaded. Your best case scenario is one run scoring. It's not realistic to expect no runs in that situation. But to only have one run score, I'd argue that worked out. And, you know, there was so much in this game where the Guardians didn't help themselves. The Yankees didn't help themselves. They have two Toot Blands in the same inning. You see something where Jazz Chisholm gets picked off. This is the sixth inning. He gets picked off while he's at second after a double. And then later you see another, like, just dumb base running blunder and another guy get thrown out between second and third. In this case, Anthony Rizzo. Just awkward, bad baseball, bad base running. But the Yankees get it done. And before we get into the Guardian side of this, this series, it's not, obviously. You got to go back to Cleveland now for three games. But this series kind of feels like it's over. And I don't know if that's the right way to look at this, but that's how it feels.
No, it does. It definitely feels that way. Because a 2-0 deficit to the New York Yankees is not a tough thing, especially when they got to 2-0 in a not impressive way. I mean, Gerrit Cole only went, you know, 4 1/3 of innings and didn't look good in this one. As you mentioned, 4 walks. It just wasn't fantastic. And then even though Judge got a home run, he's still not where he needs to be. He's not in postseason form, right? Not whatsoever. He's batting 167 in the postseason. And then you got Austin Wells, who hasn't performed well as, you know, also, and he's batting cleanup right now. I think that needs to change by game three, by the way. Maybe, I don't know what you do to do that. Maybe bring Rizzo up because Rizzo's bat's starting to get a little hot. Switch Wells with Rizzo, put Wells a little bit lower down into the lineup, but we'll see what happens there. I want to swing back real fast, say about Gleyber Torres. I think he's added a couple million dollars to his contract this winter, wherever he goes, just based on this postseason. He has really stepped up this year, and there's been a moment where I thought, you know, in the last couple seasons where we might be seeing Gleyber Torres like on the decline of his career. I don't think we're there anymore. I think we're at the point to where now we might be talking about Gleyber Torres being back up in that top tier of players, at least at his position group. Something that I don't think we could have said a couple of years, you know, the last couple of years, but he's changed that narrative this year. And I'm really excited to see where he goes because I think he could be a complete game changer on a different team once he leaves the Yankees. And I think he's going to be a fun piece. He might be one of those domino pieces in the free agency market. I'm actually really excited to see where Gleyber Torres goes.
Yeah, Torres hits free agency at age of 27, doesn't turn 28 until December. And this is something where batted 257 this year, 15 homers, 4 stolen bases, career 265 hitter. But in the postseason this year, batting 292, I would argue he's been their second most reliable hitter behind Soto, right ahead of Giancarlo Stanton. And in his career in the postseason, he's a 283 hitter. And so recency bias is a real thing, even for MLB teams. Now, the best ones don't do that. But so many MLB teams, recency bias is real. And he absolutely can get a decent deal in free agency. And you have to think that, one, the Yankees are more preoccupied with getting Soto back than they are with getting Torres back. And having Jazz Chisholm in the fold, they can play him at third. They can put him at second. They have options internally. Oswald Peraza, they can replace Gleyber Torres easier than they can replace Juan Soto, because Juan Soto is a special talent. So you have to think that it's likely he leaves. He may choose to come back. This may be just an emotional thing. But I can definitely see, we're obviously getting ahead of ourselves here. This could be 6 more games, 7 more games, 8 more games before he's a free agent. But definitely something where he's made himself some money here. On the flip side over there, looking at the Guardians in this game, really interesting decisions. You pull Tanner Bibee after 1 1/3. You have him intentionally walk Soto. It was the only walk he'd allowed. Granted, 5 hits, 3 runs, 2 earned, 2 strikeouts. He didn't necessarily appear to have his best stuff. I understand that. But you again see Steven Vogt get aggressive with pinch hitters really early. Bo Naylor gets pinch hit for by David Fry in the 4th inning. They put Austin Hedges in after that. How concerned are you that you replace one catcher with another in the 4th inning, and the guy that you choose to pinch hit for you is your emergency catcher in David Fry? If there's an injury to Austin Hedges in the last half of that game, I don't know who Cleveland throws out there. Am I overthinking the choice to have Fry pinch hit for Naylor? Is this just something where you should have started Hedges from the beginning if you're going to make a swap that early? Or is this one of those, it's not really a big deal and I'm just overthinking this?
I think it can be seen as a big deal, because that's a scenario that, you know, although we don't see happen very often, can definitely happen. And it would be a, you know, basically just calling game right there, you know, if you can't handle pitches behind the plate. But we're talking about Steven Vogt here, who has been arguably...
He can just come out and do it himself.
Wouldn't that be cool if that was an option? You know, if player manager was still a thing. But, you know, that's what we're talking about, is he's been great as a manager. And it's crazy to think that he is a first-year manager, but he has all the experience in the world about being a catcher on multiple teams. He did it successfully in his career. So obviously, you know that thought is in the back of his head when he made that move. Mm-hmm. Cleveland has not been afraid to make pinch hits early. I mean, they did it with Will Brennan in the series in the second inning the other day.
Yeah.
So, they haven't been afraid. If the matchups make sense, they're going to the pen. They're making their moves. They're using their cards. Unfortunately, it's just not working in this series. The reason it's not working in this series, Lindsay, is because they just can't get any runners in, you know, in the score. 0-for-7 in runners in scoring position yesterday's game. That makes it 1-for-11 with runners in scoring position in the series so far, leaving 16 on base between the two games. You just can't have that. And they didn't have a single extra base hit until that Jose Ramirez home run in the 9th inning off Luke Weaver. Until then, no extra base hits. All singles, as you mentioned, off Gerrit Cole. They had no hits until Tommy Cayley came in later on after that. It was just a tough offensive matchup for the Guardians. And I don't know if you're going to see that get any better for Game 3.
Yeah, I mean, you don't see an obvious path to the Guardians finding gaps, doing more defensively, or sorry, offensively, to get runners moved around and things like that. This is Stephen Kwan, been their best hitter in the postseason, goes 1-for-4. And outside of that, you know, Josh Naylor picks up 2 hits, brings his batting average over 200 finally for the postseason. Ramirez finally gets that big hit, gets that home run, still just batting 167. It's the worst time for their offense to go cold because they very much have been a station to station, string together base hits to get guys in offense versus a power offense. And I continue to, like, the Braves fan in me keeps saying it's more reliable to send four guys up and have one try to have one get a home run than it is to get four consecutive hits to bring somebody in. And I think this series has been almost been a microcosm of that. The Guardians have eight hits and they get a grand total of three runs because only one was for extra bases and it was a homer. And it's just, it's been a rough watch for the Cleveland Guardians offense trying to figure out this Yankees pitching staff as a whole, which is not necessarily a place I thought I would be going into the series. On your Steven Vogt note, I do want to say he did approach this game, especially with his bullpen decisions, like he was coaching for the series. Under the current 2-3-2 format, teams that win the first two games at home have won the series 80% of the time. So I think he kind of understood here, we have got to even this series up. Obviously, they didn't do it. And again, you're going to be heading home. They haven't announced it yet. It looks like Matthew Boyd is lined up to start game three. He'll face off against Clark Schmidt. That'll be a Thursday matchup, 5:08 p.m. on TBS. Even if Cleveland manages to take that one, I still think this series is over, and I don't even know if it makes it back to New York for a game six. I think that of the next three games in Cleveland, it's hard to say anything other than the Yankees win at least two of those and take the series and punch their World Series ticket.
Yeah, it's hard not to think that. And it's hard not at the moment to even think a sweep. But although, as we mentioned in the regular season, you know, series sweeps, three-game series sweeps are hard to do. So, you know, it's expected that at least one game will go to Cleveland in the next three. I could see this one ending in five without question, Lindsay, because of how good the Yankees have looked and how tough the Guardians' offense has looked. You know, Clark Schmidt didn't have a good game in Kansas City in his series. It wasn't fantastic, but it wasn't terrible either. 4.2 innings, allowed two runs on four hits, four strikeouts. I mean, it was just a normal kind of outing, but that's enough. Really, that's enough for how the Yankees bullpen has looked in this one. If you can get, you know, just five innings from a starter going after a day off, I think you'll be just fine. So, yeah, I would not be shocked to see the Yankees take a 3-0 lead in this one. But then again, you know, heading back to Cleveland, maybe that's the wake-up call they need. Maybe that day off is what they need to readjust. I'm not counting this Guardians team out yet because I really think that Vogt's had he's done a great job with this team. I'm really excited to see what he's going to do with the future of this ball club. But for right now, it looks like the Yankees are primed and ready to return to the World Series. And I think Aaron Boone has finally done it. I think he's finally got his team to get to where he needs to be, that we've been talking about him for so long, saying that this is the year that if he can't get to the World Series, then he needs to be done. Now, definitely, if the Yankees blow this 2-0 lead and don't find themselves in the World Series,
he's getting scared.
I mean, I think the hot seat's even hotter, to be completely honest with you. So, I think the Yankees, I think they take a 3-0 lead, and I would not be surprised if it ends in five.
Speaking of a seat that is not hot, the Philadelphia Phillies announced that manager Rob Thompson's getting a 1-year contract extension. They announced President of Baseball Operations Dave Dombrowski announced that yesterday morning. The entire coaching staff is returning as well. All of his assistants come back. The quote from Dombrowski, I think we have a good coaching staff primarily. They do a very efficient job. They did lead us to 95 wins. They've been with us for a couple of years. They're very efficient. They do their job well. We have a good manager. They work well with the manager. He would like all of his coaches back. It was pretty simple in that regard. And somebody asked, given the premature exit, losing in the divisional series to the New York Mets, if they thought about a change. And he said, it's hard for me. I mean, anytime you have a disappointing finish, which we did, but it's also hard to put that on their backs in this case, talking about the coaching staff. Extending Rob Thompson, good idea, bad idea, Or is this just something you had to do because you couldn't let him win the division and then go into 25 as a lame duck?
Yeah, it's a tough one for me, but I think it's overall the right decision. Look, he hasn't made, you know, always the right decisions when it comes down to it, but I think
our buddy Troy will beat you over the head with that.
Ooh. Right. And I'm kind of kicking ourselves for not having him on for this segment, at least today. We'll have to definitely get his thoughts on this offseason when we break this down even more. But, you know, my thoughts here is, you know, you're probably right. You probably can't give Rob Thompson the full blame for what happened in this one. He wasn't swinging the bat. Although there are some questionable decisions he's made this season, in this postseason as well, he wasn't the one swinging the bats. He wasn't the one that was on the mound pitching. So I'll give him that. But it's a completely different game when you are, you know, when you're talking about the manager. I don't know if I would have done the extension, but I also don't like the lame duck manager portion either. You just won the division, Lindsay. You're correct. I think you deserve at least a little bit of a leash to try and figure this out. I mean, he has gone to the postseason, every single time since he's been the manager, even in his interim year when he went to the World Series. So I think he deserves a little bit of credit here. But, you know, he's got a great roster, so he's got to figure it out, because I think he's quickly going to be in that Boone conversation, that Aaron Boone conversation, if we don't get some kind of progress from him right away. I could see that this extension being a look, if you continue to do great things, we won't have a problem. But if you get off to a slow start in 2025 with the roster we have, if it's not like a Atlanta Braves situation where, you know, your star players are injured, then that extension could easily just be, you know, I wouldn't say voided, but they don't care about. And I could see that being a change in the middle of the season next year. Even I could see it being that quick, even though they won the division for the first time in a decade.
Yeah. I'm going to argue that this is something you had to do, right? You know, win the division for the first time since he's been there. But he's 250 and 185 as manager. His 575 winning percentage is the highest for any Phillies manager with at least two seasons. At least 300 games, that is the highest winning percentage in team history. And a lot of that is, yes, he has a very good roster compared to previous things. But, like, he's 15th in total wins for Phillies managers already. He's one of nine skippers to have brought Philly a divisional title in 141-year history. There's no way you can say, hey, yeah, you won the division, we're going to let you be a lame duck for 25. You had to give him the extension. We don't know if he got a raise or anything. I think that's really probably the bigger thing, whether this was a you had to do it or you wanted to do it on that. But either way, it's I could see him, if they have another early exit next year, I could see him, like you said, being on the hot seat because of just not being able to get over that hump. And it would be really interesting to see how that went.
Because I can't think of a better manager right now. Like, who would you bring in at this moment right now to, after them winning the division, even though they had an early exit, like, right, how can you justify bringing in a different manager and thinking it's going to be better? Like, there's probably not one out just on the streets right now ready to go to be ready for that. And I know that you could probably make an argument for somebody, you know, Skip Schumacher maybe, right? He's always the name. But as much as Skip Schumacher is cool, is great, and he seems like he's going to be a great clubhouse guy when he actually gets to a team that's going to be really exciting, you know, and actually competitive, unlike the Miami Marlins, he hasn't proved it, right? He made it to the postseason once, but he hasn't proved it. Rob Thompson at least has done that. He's made it to the postseason multiple times. He's gone pretty far. It's just the way that they started this year and then what happened in the second half and in the postseason, I think it's just got a little bit of recency bias on the Phillies manager. I'm not advocating for Rob Thompson, because I do think that he should be on the hot seat, even though with the extension, but I do think we're maybe giving him a little bit more slack than he might deserve.
Yeah. All right, moving on real quick. We got a couple things to get to before we wrap up today. Gold Glove nominations came out yesterday. Lots of really interesting decisions in here. A little bit of controversy. I think the two... who is the bigger snub? Francisco Lindor not getting a shortstop nod in the National League, or Pete Crow Armstrong not getting the nod in center field for the National League?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I'm going to lean towards Francisco Lindor just because what he has done overall in his game this year has been outstanding. And this isn't the first time he's been snubbed all season. If you remember, he did not make the All-Star game either, right? So we're talking about a player that's going to rival Shohei Ohtani, probably easily be the runner-up for the National League MVP. And he didn't make the All-Star game when he should have. He didn't make the he didn't receive the Golden Glove like he should have in this one. But I do think Pete Crow Armstrong is also a snub. And I'll even go even one farther and say that the center field for the National League could have gone either way between Pete Crow Armstrong and I'll even throw out Michael Ciani for the St. Louis Cardinals. I think he should have been in there before one of the finalists in there. I'm not going to just like pick one out and say he should have been there, but I'll go there. And then I'll throw you one for the American League just for good fun, Lindsay. Alex Verdugo, I'll throw a name out there because I'm not afraid. Alex Verdugo did not belong in this Gold Gov conversation. Riley Green got absolutely snubbed for the Detroit Tigers. Riley Green should have been there.
Yeah, it's always really tough for left field simply because there's just so few guys who qualify. We don't know the official criteria for innings, right? But it feels like there's so few guys who actually qualify on innings. That's always a really awkward one, and I always struggle with that as well. Left field, even right field, Juan Soto feels like he's not a Gold Glove outfielder, but there were so few guys that had enough innings in right field to qualify that he ends up being in that list. I'm going to go with Lindor and then also Pete Crow Armstrong. I actually wrote this piece for Sports Illustrated for the Cubs. This is something Blake Perkins gets in over Pete Crow Armstrong. And PCA made 109 starts in 2024. Perkins made 104. They're relatively close on innings. 956 for Perkins, 965 for Armstrong. But the difference is Perkins was up all year and just didn't play. Armstrong was down twice, but when he came up, he was in the lineup almost every day. And on StatCast, PCA tied with Jacob Young at a plus 16 run value, number one in baseball in center field, despite having 300 fewer innings than Jacob Young did. Perkins was at plus nine, the eighth place guy in the National League. And to put PCA in there over Ciani, to put Perkins in there over PCA, over Ciani, heck, over Michael Harris was just a little bit of a, really just kind of did a couple guys wrong there for Perkins to be in there. And I think, again, it was skewed by the fact he was up all year, even though they didn't think he was good enough to play every day. Whereas when PCA was up, he played almost every single day he was up. Yeah. I think that should tell you something about how much they value his defense. They don't worry about the platoon. They don't worry about the offense. They just got to have this dude's glove in the lineup every day. But going forward, the National League Gold Glove is going to be so competitive. I mean, you've got Ciani, you've got PCA, you've got Jacob Young, you've got Brenton Doyle of the Rockies, you've got Michael Harris II of the Braves. You legitimately have five dudes who are Gold Glove. Jackson Merrill, he graded out better than Perkins did. You've got five or six dudes who could all make a claim to be Gold Glove caliber. And this, to me, is going to be one of the biggest Gold Glove battles in the future and going forward. And it's just, what a time to be alive, to have this sort of competition and the most important outfield defensive position in baseball in the senior circuit. I love it. Real quick, before we get out of here, there is another playoff game tonight. Dodgers and Mets in the League Championship Series. They are back in New York, tied one game apiece. Walker Buehler versus Luis Severino at 8:08 p.m. on FS1. How are you feeling about this matchup, and who do we think has the lead? Buehler hasn't been great since coming back from injury. Severino's ERA is over 5 in his last, I think, 5 or 6 starts. Who do we like here?
Yeah, I thought in the last start for Walker Buehler in the National League Division Series when he went up against them, the Padres, I thought that was a do or die moment for Walker Buehler. I thought that if he didn't have a good start, that was going to, you know, change the entire landscape of the postseason and, you know, his future as a starting pitcher. I guess Dave Roberts also didn't get that message because he's starting again, but I don't know if he has
who the else? Option. Yeah. Who else do they have to throw?
That's true.
That's this Dodgers team. And I talked about it yesterday. This is their own doing. This is their own fault, but they just don't have anybody else.
He went 5 innings, allowed 6 runs in those 5 innings and only 77 pitches against the Padres. You know, it's hard to think that he won't do that again. Yeah. You know, I have a little bit more confidence in Severino than Walker Buehler right now because Severino at least had a pretty good season. So, you know, to me, I'm giving the advantage just looking off the pitching matchup and then what we saw in game 2 with the momentum and how they got their mojo back. I'm leaning towards the Mets in game 3 tonight.
Yeah. Should we be, you'll get beat over the head with this. I'm sure from the broadcast, should we be concerned about Shohei Ohtani? He is 0-for-19 with runners, like with the bases empty this postseason. And that top three went 0-for-12 with 6 strikeouts in game 2. They did walk 3 times, but unfortunately, Teoscar and Will Smith went 0-for-7, didn't really do anything with it there. Should we be concerned that your leadoff hitter can't seem to hit unless there's runners on base?
I think it's more, you should be more concerned about the 3 total, not just Ohtani. Although that stat about him not being able to get anything going with the bases empty is obviously a concern because you got to get the party started somehow. But I think it's more of a concern about the 3 in general, not just Ohtani, because, hey, they haven't figured it out and they need to really quick before this series gets out of hand. Although it's still tied, it can easily change. We're talking about the New York Mets of 2024 here, Lindsay, the ones that were down to a final breath in the wild card and somehow are still alive. You can't give them any hope. And the way you do that is you get your Giants awoken. And the way you do that is from Shohei Ohtani, Freddie Freeman, and Mookie Betts. That's it. Buddy, close the book, finish it off.
All you got to do is get somebody on base for Ohtani. Going back to the end of the regular season, his last 19 at-bats with a runner in scoring position, he has 16 hits. He's 16-for-19 with runners in scoring position. And in the postseason, with a runner in scoring position, he's 4-for-5 with a homer and a pair of walks. And with runners on base, he's 6-for-8 with a homer and 3 walks. All you got to do is get a dude on base. But when there's nobody on base, again, 0-for-19, 10 strikeouts. It's the weirdest situational stat I think I've ever seen in a sport that is full of really weird situational stats. But I kind of agree with you. I think that the Mets have to be the favorite. Like, if you ignored the teams and I just told you these facts, the starting pitching advantage belongs to this team. They have home field advantage for the rest of the series. There's 5 games left at most. They'll have 3 at home. Their MVP candidate is on a heater right now. They don't really have any major injuries, and they've shown multiple times that they can come back from the postseason. It would be hard to argue the Mets were not the favorite. I think the only reason you would make an argument for the Dodgers is because it's the Dodgers, and we just assume, based on the talent that they have, that they should be the favorites. It's hard to argue, though. The Mets are not the favorites right now. It's just, I just don't see how you can do it. You obviously agreed with me. And yeah, I kind of feel like tonight's going to be a Mets win and they'll have the advantage in the series, something which I'm sure the league office would be thrilled about. They'll love either Ohtani versus Judge or a Subway series, either way.
They want Ohtani Judge. I mean, have you seen the commercials already?
I saw the ad during the game last night. It's Ohtani Judge ad. Golly, it was so
I thought they accidentally put a commercial out too early. I stopped to look at it and like, is this gonna say World Series? Like, is it gonna have a World Series logo on the end of it? But it just said postseason. I was like, man, they know what they want. They're releasing the script early. Don't worry. But you know, we're talking about how the Mets can easily do this, and they can. But I wouldn't be shocked if as long as they wake up, this Dodgers team just completely runs away with this series because we've been asking them to do that all season. With what they've had with this team and what's going on with this rotation, right? The easiest way you do it, and as you mentioned, Lindsay, you said it, get someone on base for Shohei Ohtani. Tommy Edmund, you're our only hope. Put him in the 9 spot, get him on base so Shohei can do his thing the second time around. That's how you do it right there.
There you go. This has been First Pitch for Wednesday, October 16th. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell. Tell your friends to go to firstpitchpodcast.com so they can check out more of what we do on a daily basis. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.